Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's Dr. Sophie to our weekly podcast. And our topic this week is mindfulness during the holidays because it's December and they're coming. You can't avoid them. They're going to be right here around the corner. So you might as well get tooled up and learn how to have a better holiday season each year that you have one. So stay tuned. Come on back and we'll be talking about tools and mindfulness during the holidays. Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's Dr. Sophie, 1-855-SOPHIE-NOW, 1-855-767-4966. Each caller will receive a free signed copy of my book, Side by Side, The Revolutionary Mother-Daughter Program for Conflict-Free Communication. Joining me today as our guest expert is Dr. Melanie Greenberg. She's a practicing psychologist, clinical psychologist from Mill Valley, California, and she is the author of her new book, Stress-Proof Brain, which is a really interesting book about how to rebuild your brain and be able to navigate stress and actually get it in a much healthier place than before you read the book. So you guys have to get this book. It's really good to build those tools that you need in order to have as stress-free of a life as we can have. Hello, Dr. Greenberg. How are you?
Hi, Dr. Sophie. I'm good.
So we'll talk about
glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here too. We'll talk about the stress-proof brain in a minute, but I want to know what your thoughts are in general about mindfulness as we're going into these holiday seasons, especially like, you know, as you know, we have these fires out here in LA and people have something everywhere. So with the added stress of every day, now we have the fun and the stress of holidays. What are people supposed to do?
Yeah, the holidays are a stressful time for people. You know, it's a mixed bag because it can be wonderful and it can be like really fun and exciting things, but there's a lot of stress. I think today it's the fires, but it's also the general getting things done and negotiating with family.
So what do you do?
Arrangements.
How do you prevent strangling somebody?
I mean, I think the first step is to be conscious, like to act mindfully. And that may start just with breathing. So there's a practice called stop. Stop. When you find yourself feeling triggered, you know, feeling stressed, stop, take a breath, observe, like sort of check in with your mind and your body. Like, what's going on here? You know, why am I so irritable? Or, you know, and then kind of reorient and figure out what your priorities are.
So stop, and breathe. Like just really slow down. Most people don't even realize they're not even breathing deeply in it. They're just like kind of just shallow breathing going through day by day, and that's not good, is it?
No, like shallow breathing or hyperventilation can actually cause a sense of panic.
Right.
It can cause panic attacks, and it puts you into fight or flight, or fight, flight, freeze, where your body's preparing for an emergency all the time, and the cortisol's revved up. And so, you know, there's a part of your brain taking over that's saying emergency, 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 and that's why, you know, you're so stressed out and you might make impulsive decisions or be irritable.
Yeah, so if it's not an emergency, you're making it feel like one at least.
Yeah, and then, you know, that makes you also lose track of your priorities. You may be, you know, accepting too many invites, spending too much money, drinking too much, staying up too late.
Yeah.
And it's important to sort of refocus and reorient. What do you want the holidays to be about for you?
And so stopping and breathing and really kind of slowing down the whole process will help.
Yes, slowing down and then being conscious, trying to make decisions consciously based on your priorities.
So
that's family, travel, faith, resting and resetting, self-care, whatever it is, let your priorities guide your decisions, your own values and your priorities, not just all the external stuff.
That's very important. Tell me more about that.
You know, I think when we're on autopilot, we make it very reactive. So we're just putting out fires and, you know, we're letting other people determine how we spend our time. And sometimes when you get so stressed in an emergency mode, you don't take the time to figure out what do I want? You know, what does my head and my heart want? How am I going to take care of myself better? So sitting down and thinking, what are my core values? Or just, you know, making a list of your priorities, even your top five. It can help you just make a decision where you can say yes or no based on those priorities.
That's really good.
And sometimes it's better to say no. It's like you can say no to the good opportunities to make room for the great opportunities.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's really great advice. And so if we're telling people to be more mindful, they're going to be saying to us sometimes, well, what's the difference between that and meditation? Is there a difference? Should there be a difference? What do you think?
Yeah, there is. You know, I think mindfulness is the way of being in the world. It's an attitude to living and a skill. And meditation would be a way of learning that skill or having that experience of separation from your automatic thoughts or your judging mind. So meditation is more of a means in a way.
Right.
And it's very important because it can change your brain. You know, there's a lot of research showing that meditation helps the compassion centers of our brain and makes the stress centers smaller. But it's only a piece of the whole philosophy.
But the mindfulness is the part that we would look at as a way of living.
Yeah, a way of living, of being conscious, trying not to be reactive, acting on with compassion, getting off of autopilot, checking in with our own inner wisdom.
So is it
that kind of thing?
Is it safe to say that meditation is a way to build your mindfulness?
Yeah, exactly. And to learn, to have the experience of what that actually means.
Right.
Because for a lot of people, it's an abstract construct. But when you meditate, you have the experience. Say you're trying to focus on the breath as an anchor.
Right.
Or, you know, you're trying to focus on what you feel in your body or what you see around you. You can begin to notice your mind wandering.
You're right.
And then catch it when it wanders.
And pull it back.
And deliberately bring it back. And so that just gives you more awareness of what your mind's doing and also more control over the focus of your attention,
so,
which can be a very powerful skill.
So there's a lot of people that try to meditate and they'll say, well, but I just start to wander. But that's good that they notice it and bringing it back, right? Because you're supposed to be wandering off in the beginning because you're not strong in that. That's what you're trying
exactly.
to strengthen.
Exactly. They call it a monkey mind in Buddhism, right? It's kind of like the tendency of a mind, like a monkey. It just naturally leaps all over the place, you know, getting caught up in sort of in the most, the latest, hottest thing or whatever
it is.
And it is supposed to be that your brain naturally wanders, but you learn to bring it back. So it's not a failure. There's no such thing as a bad meditation.
And seeing that's what I think oftentimes people feel like, you know, I was wandering and it was useless, but it wasn't.
Huh? Yeah. Yeah, that's a big thing, I think. So people give up too soon. So it's really important to understand that a wandering mind is just part of the process.
And tell me,
it's your relationship with your wandering mind. You're developing a new relationship with your wandering mind.
That's a really nice way to put it. Tell me something. What does practicing equanimity mean? Because I hear that phrase a lot, and I'm not sure what that means and how it connects to all of this.
So equanimity, I think it also is kind of a Buddhist concept originally, which is part of mindfulness. And it means not being too high or too low, you know, not getting too caught up in the highs and too running away from the lows. Because, you know, life just goes that way. You know, all kinds of experiences happen in life,
right.
Both, you know, happy ones and unhappy ones, and all kinds of emotions are normal. And so if you try to get to, you know, like grabbing onto the positive experiences and avoiding and running away from the negative, you'll end up in a state of anxiety. It's a kind of, they call it clinging.
Right.
Well, equanimity is the opposite. It's kind of just, you know, letting go and letting things be flowing with things, letting them be up and down and realizing it's all changing and impermanent anyway. So you can't just, you know, only experience positive. So it's coming to terms and accepting the negative as well.
Because we really ultimately have no control. Is that true?
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, I think we have no control over what happens. We have limited control over our moods. You can't control them in the way that you can, you know, control your budget or something. Like you can't just set a goal and then achieve the goal when it comes to mood.
Right.
There is a piece where, you know, it just flows. Once you notice your mood, you might be able to, you know, try to think more positively or whatever it is. But you can't really control what moods come over you.
And you can't control your,
so it's important,
your spouse, and you can't control your child, and you can barely control yourself. So that's why accepting all of that is better.
Exactly. And your boss, and, you know, and just all the things that happen in the world, and the politics and the fires and so on.
Right. Okay. And accepting the fact that everything is going to happen no matter what, really, and trying to be okay is the best place to be with that whole process.
Yeah. John Kabat-Zinn, who's one of the mindfulness writers and experts, he says you can't stop the waves, but you can learn to surf. And I think that's, you know, a really good way to look at it. You can't stop the waves of, you know, stresses that happen, for example, or your own moods. But you can learn to kind of negotiate them.
And navigate them.
Given that this is happening, you know, what's the best thing for me to do now?
Got it. And so you have all these tools of mindfulness and meditation and practicing equanimity in light of the upcoming holiday chaos that's coming. And is that the best way to look at it, to utilize these tools as often and get proficient with them so that they're kind of at your fingertips?
Yeah, it all takes practice. I mean, mindfulness not only can make you feel less stressed in the moment, but over, you know, couple of months, it can actually change your brain so that you naturally will react in a less stressed way. And another important tool is compassion for self and others.
What does that mean specifically?
So what that means is a kind of, you know, it's being kind, I suppose. It's trying to take, you know, the kindest attitude, the most understanding attitude. And there's three aspects. I think one is the kindness or self-kindness. You know, rather than just always judging people, you know, beating yourself up, it's trying to kind of understand where people are coming from.
Yeah.
Or trying to even understand where you're coming from and giving yourself a break, allowing yourself a mistake is another piece.
So
they call it common humanity, like we're only human.
So before we move on.
Don't have to be perfect.
Right. Before we move on, though, really, in order for us to be okay with other people, we really have to be okay with ourselves first. Is that what you're saying?
I think so. I think it's much easier.
Otherwise you're triggered when you see something you don't like about yourself and other people.
Yeah, or you might project, or you might have like these negative stories.
Right.
About, say for example, you can't trust anybody, that would be a negative story. And so then you'll see everything through that lens.
Right. So really cleaning up your own house is really the best place to start.
Yeah, and you have more control over that anyway.
And then what are the other components of this compassion notion?
So I think one of the other parts is this kind of common humanity. Like we're only human, we don't have to be perfect. And we should allow, you know, ourselves and others to make mistakes. You know, a lot of people, especially around the holidays, it brings up a lot of guilt and perfectionism.
Right.
So people, you tend to people please, or you tend to, you know, get competitive with the neighbor about the decorations.
Right.
Feel like you have to make every pie from scratch.
Right.
Or that you have to accept every invitation.
Or you play that game when you go to your work party where you have to pass the gift on and somebody can grab your gift and open it.
Oh, yeah.
And then people will get, like, murderous during that because they wanted that gift that somebody took. So it's, like, really, it can get competitive.
Yeah, that's so funny. That's a really good example. You know, and in our neighborhoods, especially actually when I lived in San Diego, Southern California, but here, too, there's just lots of decorations. And you have, you know, winter wonderland, and then the other one has a better winter wonderland next door, so you feel bad.
Right.
You know, that's, there's no reason for that.
Or you put your, or you put your sprinkler system on to destroy their winter wonderland.
Exactly, that's okay. That's been done before.
It has been done. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of that kind of stuff, but really being compassionate to yourself and to others is really a really great place to start as well.
There's one other way you can apply this is, I think, you know, to your relatives and to, you know, when you, often people spend time with their families over the holidays. And, I mean, one way to apply this is to try to think of people as being well-intentioned but unskillful, or to notice when they are. I mean, somebody may have a bad intention, but most people are well-intentioned. And so, you know, if you have your aunt nagging you why you're not married yet or whatever it is, trying to think of her as well-intentioned but unskillful rather than, you know, thinking that she's
such a
creep. You're never going to talk to her again.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's really hard to do, but I think if you practice
it. Really hard.
If you practice it, it becomes second nature over time.
Yeah, exactly. And just the label unskillful is quite a compassionate label.
It certainly is. It's a nice way to say that. They don't know what they're talking about. All right, I want to read you this email. Jen from Atlanta, Georgia is sending us an email asking, like many other holidays, being around my family puts me on edge, mostly because I feel like when we get together, we all evaluate each other and how our lives are going. Is there a way to not let this affect me? How can I use mindfulness to my advantage during this holiday season?
Oh, yeah, that's a really good question. That's a common situation that people face. I mean, you can't stop other people from evaluating you, but you don't have to get caught up in it. So I think part of it is not giving them too much power, trying not to give other people's opinions too much power, you know, trying to understand what it is about your life that makes you happy.
See, and that's,
or that you feel good about, and come from that.
And how do you do that? How do you take the things that are really going to be the most important to you and matter the most during the holidays and keeping that like front of mind using mindfulness? How does mindfulness help us get those things front of mind so that this other stuff doesn't blur us or distract us?
Yeah, I mean, there's one way can be just trying to come from your own head and your own heart. You know, like just noticing what you're feeling in your body, you know, what you want, and letting that guide your decisions rather than being reactive to other people. And there also could be boundaries. Mindfulness can be a basis for boundaries. You know, taking time and space for yourself if you need it. You know, choosing who you spend your time with, choosing how much time you spend with them. Choosing what you talk about, you know, walking away.
So,
if things are exacerbating, you know, taking a break.
And so, I guess
those might be some examples.
Okay, they're good ones. And what about, should someone carve out time for themselves to make sure they're meditating on a regular basis, especially during the holidays, or that they're, you know, sitting down to be a little bit connected alone?
Yeah, I think that's really good. I mean, often people in the holidays, they don't start these practices or they let go of them because they're rushing around. And yet, you know, because you're rushing around, you actually need it more.
Right.
So, and I think if you don't meditate, just trying to spend 10 minutes to begin with, 5 or 10 minutes, just breathing. And you can actually just watch the breath, you know, going all the way in and all the way out. You can watch a couple breaths, just following its progress from your nostrils down the back of your throat into your chest and stomach.
Right.
And then back out again, and notice your mind wandering and bring it back to the breath. That's kind of the most basic meditation. So if you just do that, begin doing that for 5 minutes at a time, even, you know, when you just have 5 minutes or at the traffic light or whatever it is. And I think the regularity is really important, even if you don't do it for as long to begin with.
But the consistency,
you can build it up.
Consistency is the key?
Yeah, exactly. Consistency. So it becomes a habit, you know, and then habits become more automatic and more easy to practice.
Okay. I want to play you a voicemail that we just got in earlier today.
Sure. I feel like especially during the holidays, I lose track of time and I never have enough of it. Is there any way I can spend my time more efficiently this year by using mindfulness or some other practice? Thank you.
What do you think?
So I think that this fits in with what we were talking about. It's about being clearer about your priorities, being mindful about your values or your priorities, and, you know, using that as a basis for how to spend your time and saying no, you know, letting go of things, saying no to things that are not interesting and important to you. And So that also takes, you know, maybe sometimes having a bit of planning time.
Right. Yeah.
Trying to look through, you know, what's going to happen in your day and figure out what's most important to me, what do I care about the most, you know, what will help me the most, what's most consistent with my goals and values, and trying to find that sort of that bigger consciousness that goes beyond just the immediate demands of the moment.
And how do we look at, like, letting things be just good enough? Like, how do we let go of perfectionism as a focus during holiday season? Because, like, as we said earlier, everyone wants to be perfect, especially during the holidays, or compete or be better than.
So I think it's sometimes developing a compassionate inner voice. Like trying to be a coach to ourselves, a compassionate coach to ourselves. So, you know, sometimes it's so much easier to be compassionate with other people than ourselves.
Right.
And so, you know, it's finding that voice. It's okay if you buy the cake rather than making it from scratch.
Right.
You know, and everybody will be fine with it and you need a rest. You know, something like that, like the coaching.
Why is it so difficult for us to be kind and compassionate to ourselves? It's easier to do it with others.
Question. I don't know exactly, but I mean, one possibility could be that we're social beings and we're wired to fit into the tribe, because for our ancestors, you know, they had grew up in tribes and you needed the tribe to survive, you know, like, you know, to fight off the wild animals and to get enough food and to get through the winter. And so if you got kicked out of the tribe, your chances of survival were very slim. So
right.
I think it got wired into us, you know, to know how to get along with other people. And so maybe that's why because of that survival focus, it comes into our brains first.
But we don't have to really listen to that all the time, you're saying. We can be compassionate and talk to that part of ourselves and say, it's okay, take a breath. Buy the cake, don't make the cake, whatever, and enjoy yourself. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's a skill we often have to develop. It also depends how people spoke to us when we were young.
Yes, a lot of that.
You know. Yeah, they say how you speak to your children becomes their inner voice.
Right.
So it's important to be mindful how you speak to your children. But again, if we've grown up with, you know, guilt and criticism, and that's what's going to be wired in. That's what we're going to naturally hear. So you have to really practice finding that alternative voice.
Yes.
And again, thinking about, well, what if it was my child, or what if it was someone I love?
Right.
Is an easy way to get that perspective.
Well, and it should be somebody you love as you.
Exactly.
So tell me,
you need your love more than anybody else.
That's exactly right. So tell me about physical health, though. We're talking about mental health. Physical health can get affected during the holidays as well. Food, diets, medical problems. I mean, what are people supposed to do? You can't go through not eating a cookie.
Yeah. And again, I think that wouldn't be very self-compassionate, you know, to be
right.
That depriving.
Right.
Because it is a time for celebration, and they are unique, special things to taste and buy and smell. So, you know, that piece is about balance, but there's something called mindful eating. And mindful eating, it's different than overindulging, you know, and just mindlessly eating and eating on autopilot, but it's also different than, you know, trying to diet and deprive yourself too rigidly. It's more like trying to listen to your inner wisdom, trying to notice the inner cues of, for example, of fullness or hunger, as opposed to just, you know, responding to the external cues.
So give me an example. Give me an example of what that would look like if you're getting ready to sit down and you're going to have this big holiday meal and all that kind of stuff.
So some of it might be, checking in with yourself, like, okay, check in with your body. Am I hungry? How hungry am I?
Right.
Oh, you know, and I guess if you did practice just tuning in to what does hunger feel like? What does hunger feel like in my stomach? What is, you know, and then thinking about, well, what taste do I feel like? Do I feel like salty or sweet? Really, and practicing that as well, just checking in with what, you know, with your mouth or whatever, what taste do you
right,
want?
Right.
And then, you know, just maybe taking some bites, taking a little bit, and then checking in, you know, how do I feel now? Do I want more, or was that enough? So it's basing it on your internal needs. And then I think, you know, there's other pieces like if you're listening to people listen to external cues, it's like a lot of people go and have that venti eggnog frappuccino that, you know, 1,020 calories just because it's a beautiful picture that looks enticing. So my having a mindful eating philosophy can be more about, before you do that, check in, you know, how hungry am I?
What
and
am I
maybe also
for?
Just thinking about, you know, is this going to serve me? How is this choice going to serve me? Is this a good choice for my values, for my health, for my well-being?
I think that's great. I mean, because a lot of people just jump in and start eating when, if they really just went through a little bit of a process. Am I hungry? How does hunger feel? What do I want? Am I sweet, sour, salty, whatever? You break it down to a point where it's really about food. It's not an emotionally based decision. It's not a arbitrary grab for something that's impulsive.
Exactly. And then also, you know, it's about also not eating on autopilot, like really using the eating as a chance to nurture yourself, enjoying every moment, you know, slowing down and actually focusing on the taste.
You're treating yourself.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. And you want to be present for the experience.
Right.
You know, a lot of people just eat at the desk, their desks, or, you know, eat in the car.
Yes.
Their minds somewhere else. Yeah. You want to be present and treating yourself, especially in the holidays.
Got it. So, Dr. Melanie Greenberg, great information. Really, really good insight. Where can we find more about you? What's your website?
Thank you. So my website is drmelaniegreenberg.com.
Okay.
And it's got lots of blog posts on mindfulness and health and relationships and other issues. And I've got a newsletter. And then I also write a blog for Psychology Today called The Mindful Self-Express, self-express. And then I also have a book called The Stress-Proof Brain that came out this year.
That's what I want to hear about. What is that all about?
Yeah, I'm very excited with my first book.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And so it's a formula using mindfulness, self-compassion, positive psychology, and other tools to help you not only manage stress, but through repeated practice to rebuild your brain, to be more resilient, to get off that fight, flight, freeze, and that autopilot, and you know, to strengthen the centers of your brain that can have you have a healthier relationship to your stress. You can't get rid of stress. It's a part of life.
Right.
But you can change your response to it.
I think that's
to be
wonderful.
Healthier.
And your book is The Toolbox for People to Learn How to Rebuild Their Brains.
That's correct. To build a stress-proof brain.
Love it.
Or a resilient brain, even if not 100% stress-proof.
Well, better than it started off, right?
That's for sure.
So where can we find this book?
On Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Kindle, and, you know, all the usual places. And on my website, there'll be a link as well to where you can buy it.
Very nice. So I hope your holiday season is not too stressful and you learn and use your tools that you teach all of us of mindfulness and meditation.
Well, thank you. Yeah. You know, using your own tools is also a big piece of it, I think.
And
I wish you a happy holidays as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Dr. Greenberg. Great information, and appreciate all of your efforts and all of the work that you do to help people understand and learn how to navigate stress and have a much more enjoyable, healthy life. So I think that we learned a lot today, and there's tons of stuff about meditation, mindfulness, and all that stuff out there. But I think what we learned most today that I think is important for us to take away is, number one, we have to go through the holiday season conscious, like not unconscious, not sort of conscious. We really have to be present with our bodies. We have to know how we feel. We have to know what we're thinking. We have to slow the whole thing down so that we're breathing deeply and we're enjoying ourselves, because rushing through it, we're not conscious then. We're just impulsively running through something. And then when it becomes January 1st, we're all exhausted. So slow it down, be conscious, deep breaths. That's the number one way to really have mindfulness and enjoy your holiday season. I think the second thing that we learned today, which was very important, is that you've got to set a list of priorities for yourself. So you have to have, like, maybe the top five core values that speak to you, your values, and then build your priorities for the holidays around that, so that your expectations and all of the lists that you have are built around that and not as overwhelming. And I think that we heard from Dr. Greenberg today that having that core list of values is really the starting place for a really solid holiday. The second or the third thing I think that's very important that we learned is that when we are mindful and we do practice equanimity, which is really just about balance and power in our life, that we can't expect life to just be solid. It's never going to just be neutral. We're going to have the highs of life. We're going to have the lows of life. But what we have to do is always get ourselves back to that place of balance. And being mindful and using the tools of meditation to strengthen our mindfulness is the way to keep ourselves in better balance. The fourth thing that's, I think, and very important for us to learn is to have a sense of compassion as we go through the holidays. Compassion for ourselves as well as compassion for others. Very difficult to have compassion for ourselves, but that's the place to start, because when you have it for you, you'll have it for others. That's why it's easier to have it for others, because it's difficult to have it for yourself. Figure it out and find a way to be compassionate to yourself. Be kind to yourself, forgive yourself, allow yourself to make mistakes, allow yourself to buy the cake instead of make the cake and make it perfect. Allow yourself to have some mistakes, because not being perfect is part of being compassionate and understanding and accepting of yourself, which then translates to others. So that's a very important concept as well. And I think the last thing that we have to really look at and we learned today, which is very important, is the concept of consistency, that if we don't practice mindfulness and we don't use the tools of meditation and equanimity and balance to build our mindfulness on a consistent basis, we're never going to master these tools, which are not only for use during the holiday season, they're tools that we can use throughout the rest of our lives. And so getting proficient at them, strengthening them, and being patient with yourselves as we get stronger in these tools is really the best thing to do. So consistency, practice them, do them, carve out time in your schedule, especially during the holidays, to practice your meditation, your mindfulness, and your practice of equanimity. So those are the four points I think that are very important for us to take away from today's podcast. Thank you guys for listening today, for all your calls, for your voicemails, for your emails. Podcasts are always available on my website and on iTunes. And you can find my website at www.drsophie.com. My phone app is also available to you in the iTunes store, so go check it out. My voicemail is always available to you at 1-855-767-4966. My book, Side by Side, The Revolutionary Mother-Daughter Program for Conflict-Free Communication, is always available to you. Follow me on Twitter and Facebook for updates. Visit the iTunes store to download the full version of Andy Grammer's Keep Your Head Up. And the most important thing is don't forget to sweep. Thank you.